of the Emergency Alert System. From Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Good Monday morning to you. A little hoarse this morning. I don't know. We were in Atlanta over the weekend. Thanks to Scott Butcher for filling in on Friday. And we appreciate what a way to celebrate the Juneteenth holiday. Driving to Atlanta, Georgia, listening to Scott Butcher cover your own radio show. But it sounded like it went pretty well. But once again, thanks to him. Coming up on the program today, State Representative Shane Stringer making his every other week appearance. That's in about a half hour from now. Also on the program, we'll hear from Dale Jackson from WVNN, Yellowhammer News, some other places, Twitter, and then Jerry Carl, who's running in our first congressional district. Well, more on that in a minute. But getting the backing of Katie Britt a few days ago. And we'll talk to him about that coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. You want to be in touch with me, your show host. All you got to do is text me, and we'll do our best to respond to whatever it is that's on your mind. Starmer resigns in the United Kingdom. I don't know. Is that on anybody's radar? This could go on for a while. I don't know. I don't have a full grasp of British politics, but it seems to be kind of dominating the news. The other big story, if you will, is the Iran deal. And it just seems like that is proceeding, but we'll see if it sticks. Oil trading at $73 a barrel continues to slide. And obviously, it's going to take a little while for gas prices to catch up. But they seem to be trending in that direction, just having traveled a little bit. You notice it. So I think that's, just in time, maybe not in time. But there's sort of a skepticism, especially if you watched the Sunday shows yesterday. There's nothing Donald Trump can do right with that crowd. Nothing at all. Everything is a surrender note or some kind of sellout. We see it over and over again. And it's to be expected. So that way you don't really know what the real story is here. We hear from the Trump administration, but they're going to present the rosiest scenario, and the media are going to present the most awful scenario. So it may seem like a smart thing to do to kind of think it's somewhere in between. There's no evidence or proof that that's the case. See if the Strait of Hormuz remains open. We'll continue. Keep an eye on it, but the markets, and I guess that's one metric we could have to kind of go by. The markets seem to think things are headed toward a peaceful solution. I tell you what you want to watch, and those of you who do watch the news, is essentially if the they stop talking about gas prices, then the gas prices are good news for Republicans. If you watch CNN and the Chiron with the ticker with the minute by minute gasoline price update, if that just vanishes and disappears and goes away, then you know that things are probably that's not a thread to pull anymore. They'll move on to something else. They'll talk about the East Wing ballroom or something. They'll talk about what's the latest is like the reflecting pool at the National Mall. The things we're told that like that it's crazy how like they just kind of find things to needle at to kind of create this populist resentment, class warfare. But none of it's really sticking. It's just like these guys are talking to themselves. That they spend money doing upkeep on the National Mall. Is that really doing it for anyone? Is anybody like, oh man, I could have had that money for, I'm a starving lower middle class worker. We could have used that money on gasoline or something. I mean, people don't think that way. People aren't paying that close attention. But that's the way it sort of went yesterday. And I, you know, the more they gin it up, the populist resentment, the longer, the more it's going to cause a civil war in their own party. They're not fooling anybody. I know most of you aren't involved in Democratic Party politics. But they got their own, you know, their own coveted Wall Street donor class, their own tech billionaire class that they have to grapple with. There's not many numbers there, but they do kowtow to them. I think it's like your next big sort of flashpoint in politics is going to be this Democratic Party Civil War as we head into this 2028 cycle. I mean, we still got to get through 26, and they'll do well. They'll have momentum. But they're going to get high. This is how it's going to go. Democrats will have a good night on November 3rd. And they'll get high on their own supply, and they're going to think that they're cruising toward 2028. And then they're going to run into a roadblock. They're not going to have, like they had in, like the last time this sort of happened was 2008. You had 06, which was a very good cycle for Democrats. And then they had Hillary Clinton versus Barack Obama, but Obama's sort of like this historic figure. And what did they really argue about on a policy basis, the two of them? They were in line. But I think you're going to have like a real policy division here in the Democratic Party. What kind of party do you want it to be? Do you want it to be the party of Chuck Schumer? Or the Bernie Sanders? Which is like Graham Platner and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. You don't really have an in-between right now. I mean, they could say Hakeem Jeffries, but there are a lot of questions if he's even going to be able, if indeed the Democrats get the House in November, he's going to have the ability to be Speaker. But it's just, right now it's a referendum on Trump, and it'll be successful in the interim. The one thing that they could make it a referendum on and probably do well is a Supreme Court. They keep calling it court reform. We can't let them get away with that. It's not reform. It's trying to rig the system in your favor. That's what they do. They can't win at the ballot box. They can't win the way the system is designed, so just change the system. And that's the whole, like sort of map to power. They had to change the system with the Voting Rights Act. And then the court said, no, that's not how this is supposed to work. I mean, yeah, there were some real indiscretions committed in the past. Sixty years ago. You can't live like this forever. I still think it's a harder than just to talk about. I know it's come up, bringing statehood to D.C. and Puerto Rico, packing the court, and just having Democrat majorities from here until, you know, the end of time. But that's a lot harder to do. Especially given a state of statehood, that's very difficult. But that's the fear. That's something the Republicans can run on in 2028. It's just going to be get Trump. They're going to waste all their political capital on pointless impeachment proceedings that are meant to rouse the base. Trump's not going to be kicked out of office. I don't think there'll be the votes in the Senate to convict and impeach, then convict in the Senate. But we're going to do another, we'll probably see impeachment two more times. It'll be something like Ukraine, remember? Somehow Republicans, well, we don't do this. They didn't do it during Biden. Well, we don't know who was president then. 251-343-0106. But it's a lot of it's Iran deal. Starmer. A lot of Starmer talk. Which, not necessarily a good sign for the globalist left. Alan Greenspan dead at 100. Who had a big role in, I don't know, the way we looked at interest rates of the economy. Sort of a guy who had a lot of clout in D.C. circles. He was certainly in the cocktail party circuit. They've been around a long time, and like I said, in government, Fed chief for nearly two decades. And I think goes back to like, what, President Ford even. It used to be the, remember the day some of you, they would look at and see the size of the briefcase? The Greenspan was taken into a Fed meeting to see what the, to try to predict what the Federal Reserve was going to do with interest rates. And then, like, I guess late in life, married Andrea Mitchell from NBC News. I read his book, but it was like 20 years ago. It probably really changed the role of the Federal Reserve. Became more of an actor in the American economy with Alan Greenspan. And, you know, it became something that market watchers, you know, became like just keenly focused on more than any other time. And I guess, like, he was kind of this architect at the very end when the housing crisis happened. 251-343-0106. Let's know what's on your mind. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Bohr Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person cold. But I can't say the same for me. I've done it many times. Somebody take me home. Through those.
Welcome back to the Jeff Bohr Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the show. All you do is text me. Still come on the program. And the next time we'll hear from Shane Stringer. lawmaker from Mobile County, North Mobile County. We'll talk to him about what we will, what to expect here and his reaction to the elections last week. Tinsel Spammer, from what I read, the UK has gotten sick of their government. Starmer on migration to get out of control. Well, it's not only just allowing migration to get out of control, Toothless Spammer. I think he had sort of it was like a very aggressive approach to anybody who criticized it, who criticized the policy, threatening activists. They don't have freedom of speech. And like he was very, like I said, very aggressive going after his detractors. And, you know, that sort of approach in parliamentary politics and that kind of system, it's not long for this world. A lot of instability in British politics right now. Scrovereen, the liberal wackos, vandalized DC monuments and wanted them all destroyed yet. Expect us to believe their phony baloney frustrations about the East Wing and the reflecting pool. Yeah, they are. The new line was like bullets in ballrooms. I heard somebody say that. That's the new talking point. I think like Mark Kelly or somebody. Debbie writes, I'm okay with spending money on the upkeep of the National Mall. It's the fraud in Minnesota, California that infuriates me. Now we're talking like millions in upkeep, but we're talking about billions in fraud. Let's hear from an unnamed texter. You're right about the Democratic Party. They've always had problems governing. The old split from the McGovern days never went away. The radicals of the party cannot govern. They will self-sabotage. And I think the radicals in the party are really the energy in the party. Without the radicals, I mean, you know, you don't have the protests. You don't have this energy, this sense that something's going on. But it's such a small part of it. They run the party. So, and I'll always say this, when it gets to the Democratic National Convention, look at the people at the convention. They're not even your, like, I don't know, your high school biology teacher, kind of hippie, tree hugger, peacenik, whatever. They're full-fledged radicals, revolutionary, borderline. That's what they do. And they're kind of dictating the terms of modern Democratic Party politics, which is out of the mainstream. I don't think that can win in a national election. I think they can win in a midterm, but in a presidential election, I don't believe that. Greenspan was a closeted gold bug. He was one of the last technocrats who could actually manage an institution. Now it seems our technocrat class has no vision or understanding. Allowing $39 trillion will end America as we know it. At this point, the interest payments take up 30% of taxes raised by the government. Well, that's interesting about the last technocrat who can manage. Because we've DEI-ified government. It's not a meritocracy. There's this war on meritocracy. There's this war on, you know, sort of the circumstances, what the circumstances are versus what you want the circumstances to be. What the world we're trying to create, this like social engineering that is destined for failure. Rock and roll doctor, does the Fed really distribute its profits to the U.S. Treasury, or does that entity, which isn't federal at all, it's a privately held bank, break even on cash flow? They do have some high overhead, as Trump has pointed out. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Living on the road, my friend.
gonna keep you free and clean.
Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51. Smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do.
It's good to see. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is text me, and we'll do our best to respond to what it is that is on your mind. Still a couple on the program. Dale Jackson, WVNN, Yellowhammer News. That's about an hour from now. About 2 hours from now, Jerry Carl, running for Congress in the 1st Congressional District. It's been a little bit since we've had him on, but he'll be with us in the 11 o'clock hour, so make sure you stay tuned for that. But joining us now on the line, we just every other week, my friend, State Representative Shane Stringer is with us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Doing great, Jeff. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, thanks for hopping on this morning. Well, I guess we'll just kind of throw it to you. It's been almost a week now, but we had our runoff elections, and we got candidates, except for the congressional races, in our area, but we have candidates for all the other statewide offices. So it's going to be a completely different look in 2027 with state government.
Yeah, I think the results were pretty similar to what everybody was expecting and kind of pretty close anyway with some of the polling that was done. So, yeah, we're got that behind us and ready to move forward and see if we can get this congressional elections handled and see who we got there, and we'll be ready to move forward with the generals.
I'll tell you something. I was a little surprised, but you know, Lieutenant Gubernatorial Candidates talking about Big Creek Lake. That was interesting.
Yeah, it's a major issue, and I think the more light that shine on that, I think the more you're going to see other candidates that are not just candidates, elected officials that are going to say, no, something ain't right. It's not meeting the smell test here. And they're going to be willing to get on board and let's dig a little deeper and see what we got there. Cause something just ain't adding up with all of that.
Well, you could get them talking about Highway 45 too while you're at it. And then you're really cooking.
Yeah, absolutely. We're working on that. So still trying to gain some support, hopefully 4-lane 45 and maybe even finish 4-lane in the 158 extension out to Mississippi. And that seems to be where we're having the majority of the major wrecks now. So just keep trying to, you know, work on it and see what we can do.
What's the hold up on that? What's the hold up on the, because that just seems like that ought to be a priority and rerouting that traffic that way and around Sims and instead of going down Moffett Road.
Yeah, it really should be. The money was there from what I was told by ALDOT, the money was there to complete it. And then there was a couple of lawsuits in the middle of construction that held the project up 10 or 15 years. And because of the increase of cost for building roads and everything else, and then, I guess the lawsuits and stuff, the money's just not there to finish it. But we will continue to fight to get the money for that from the state budgets to ALDOT and see what we can do to make that happen. It's not going to be as expensive because they've already got most of the land acquisition. A lot of the bridges, a lot of the infrastructure is already set up for a 4-lane all the way to Mississippi. So it shouldn't be as heavy of a lift as it's going to be or has been for Highway 45.
Well, they're not. A lot of times they don't tell us what the price tag is on these things. That's something that's got to change because, you know, like we can operate on, we don't have the money for it. We don't have the money for it. Well, then, like, why aren't there price tags assigned to these projects so, like, the public can evaluate what the state is making a priority and what they're not?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And that's one of the things I've been requesting from ALDOT since I've been in the legislature. And obviously, I've not had much luck accomplishing that. But I would like to know that. I would like to know, you know, how much each of these projects are costing and how much we're putting in different areas of the state and make sure that we're not being left out and set aside, which I believe we are. There's been some improvements and a lot of upgrades to 45. They have definitely made a difference, and the rumble strips would probably be the biggest thing that's reduced wrecks up there and help with the head-on collisions that we were dealing with. And but it's still got to have some pavement on the ground, and we have got to come up with the money to do it.
But some of it's just this. It's like you could get this. I had to imagine the getting that stretch of 158 done. It would be a lot cheaper than four-lating some road in West Alabama. Because you got a lot of the bridges already constructed. You're just building a two-lane road for the other side of that. And I mean, like, what's the price tag? Well, we don't know. Or they don't tell you this. There's no transparency there. It's always been like a frustration trying to get the Alabama Department of Transportation to kind of tell us what they're doing. It's very deep state-ish.
Yeah, it's definitely needs some better transparency there, and hopefully, you know, that will continue to get better as we move forward. But if we could get that, I think that would help us to, you know, help the public to push for which roads they feel like is the most important. You know, I was traveling through North Alabama Saturday, and, you know, a lot of the roads up there, man, they were pretty much three lane, where it would be two lanes going north for 5 miles, then it would be two lanes going south for 5 miles. And it was enough freedom there that, you know, people wasn't piled up behind each other. If you got an impatient driver, they were able to get around and keep moving. And, you know, there's options that we've got that we can do on 45 Celeste Road from Sarah Land to Central Nail, some of the other roads that definitely would make a huge difference.
So it's just like, you know, and traveling a little bit, but it just seems like we're behind Mississippi, Tennessee, Florida, and Georgia. And I got to think, like, look, the increase in construction materials and labor it's not just an Alabama phenomenon that stretches in these other states, yet they're able to make these needed improvements. Now, they still got problems. I'm not going to say everything's perfect, but I feel like traffic in these places is a lot less of an issue than it is in Alabama, especially in rural areas.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of that traveling this weekend, I did cut over from 20 into Mississippi and came down 45 into Central Dale. And, you know, like I said, it's four-laned all the way through there, and definitely makes a difference. And I think it just comes down to priorities, and we've got to make sure that our leadership from the governor down makes it a priority to work on these roads that are a major problem or concern in our area, in our part of the state.
Well, I think a lot of y'all, when you voted on the gas tax in 2019, there was these promises. There was this joint oversight committee, and it was gonna hold the bureaucracy accountable, and where nothing was gonna get wasted. And then yet here we are. We're taking 20 years of Rebuild Alabama funds to build the West Alabama corridor, and no one seems to think there's anything we can do about it.
Yeah, I think there's absolutely something that can be done. I mean, it comes down to priorities, and it's like anything else in life. You can make it a priority. If it's important to you, you can make it a priority. And I think that, you know, we're going to see some priorities change with leadership change coming up soon with a new governor. And, you know, we'll see what his desires are and what's important to him. And I guarantee if it's important to him, it will happen. And that's what we've got to look at. You know, I think that anything is doable. There's ways to do anything. And I think that they could probably get some federal funding to help with the 43 corridor project, and that would open up money and more stuff for other areas of the state. But, you know, I'm a legislator, not the governor, so I'm doing my part, and I'm sure they'll do their part.
Yeah, I just think, I can't imagine that when all y'all were, and you had a gun to your head trying to told to vote for this, or you were going to have your districts penalized, that you expected it to be used in such a way, you know, that we would take a pot of money and we would repave a bunch of roads, and then the big project would be something that would tie up the rest of this for the next three administrations. And just, you know, and I like conversations with the speaker and the pro tem, and they don't like the way that was done either. But it becomes a situation, representative, where it just seems like the toothpaste is out of the tube. You can't really put it back in. They're probably going to get their road in West Alabama.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. That don't mean we continue to, you know, I'm not going to give up and quit fighting for my district and all of the areas that need addressing here. You're 100% correct, man. There's got to be some better ways to pick these projects and look at them. And, you know, I know that ALDOT's got their criteria and stuff, but they also still answer to the governor and the leadership. So we have got to, things have got to change. We have got to try to see what we can do to, you know, address some of these major concerns. There's too many people that have lost their lives on 158 just in a short period of time since that road's opened up. And, you know, we even closed down the entrance to 45, to Moffitt Road out near the Mississippi line to force people to come through the new road, 158. And because of that, we've put so much traffic on it. And now, naturally, everybody goes that way, and the traffic is just phenomenal. It's created a major backup and problem there in Saraland at 65 and 158, all the way back, backing cars up all the way to, you know, Mobile College and further. So there's definitely, you know, we gotta look at it and see what we can do to try to make things better and try to get that road four laned all the way through.
Joined by State Representative Shane Stringer here on the program. The other thing, we talked about it last week before I took off Friday, but new governor, another shot at gambling, I think, is coming. And, you know, have you been approached yet about 2028? Be 2027?
No, not heard of anything from anybody yet, but I would expect the same thing you're saying is that it is coming. And I think that there will, you know, we'll start putting pressure on everybody and trying to get some ideas of where everybody stands with that. So we'll see that coming soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, because they keep doing this to us, Representative, that we need to pass some kind of gambling bill, comprehensive gambling reform, because there's illegal gambling going on in Alabama. And it's just like, why not just pass something to crack down on the illegal gambling? But that's just not going to that's just a discussion we're not allowed to have for whatever reason.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that there's absolutely a way to address the illegal gaming and put that to stop, but we hadn't done that yet. So I think the majority of the citizens in Alabama would love a lottery bill, would like to see a lottery bill. When you get into the full-blown gaming is where it becomes sketchy, and a lot of the citizens don't want the crime and corruption that comes with the full-blown gaming here in Alabama.
Yeah. Well, it's just, though. Now, I know we had Phoenix City, and, you know, it's come up all throughout Alabama history, the sort of speakeasy, look the other way. But for years, especially during Riley's administration, when it tolerated, it's a misdemeanor. And so there's this like sort of mentality with law enforcement, and not necessarily in our area, but in other parts of the state, that it's not even worth trying to enforce. It's just a misdemeanor. We got real serious crimes. So there's illegal gambling going on in broad daylight.
Yeah, absolutely. There again, it comes down to priorities. I mean, if it's a priority, then we would be passing tougher laws to deal with illegal gaming, and we would be shutting it down. And then that would not be a problem. So that wouldn't be, you know, we wouldn't be discussing that. But it comes down to priorities and, you know, what you're making as a priority in your life and your career. And obviously shutting down the illegal gamings is not a priority right now.
No, and this is, it became a big issue during the AG discussion. At least I forced it to be, where, and this is true with a lot of different things. We have these local prosecutors, and they don't, the law is the law, but they don't see that as the most important law to enforce. At least that's what they will say. So things like absentee ballot fraud, illegal gambling, and I don't know, whatever else, it just goes under the radar unchecked.
Yeah, I agree. There's certainly need to be looking at that. But, you know, we really should be enforcing the rule of the law and shouldn't be picking and choosing which ones we want to enforce or not enforce, or which one we think is important or not important. We need to be doing what's right for the best interest for the morals and ethical values of Alabama, and making sure that we're keeping things on the up and up here at home.
Yeah, because you can't just not enforce a law. What kind of message does that send about everything else if you're going to look the other way? This is, I think, what led Montgomery to get out of control for a while. Is, you know, you turn a blind eye to a lot of kind of misdemeanor crimes, and then eventually it becomes a lawlessness.
Yeah, absolutely. You take care of the small stuff, and that will take care of the big stuff. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think we have got to, there's got to be checks and balances in everything we do in life. And I think there needs to be checks and balances in making sure that we're addressing everything in our state to the best of our ability.
Representative, we'll leave it there, but we always appreciate your time. We'll do it again in a couple of weeks.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on.
State Representative Shane Stringer there. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Hopping in the wind like an angry cannonball. Your school days are a pair of years. We got rebel flags flying and Budweiser beer. Plenty of snow in the middle of June. On a hot and muggy afternoon.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. So a little, getting a few questions about this. The voice a little hoarse this morning, and I, you know, we went to a couple of Braves games on Friday and Saturday, and it wasn't for yelling at the games. Don't really yell at a baseball game like you do a football game. But my suspicion is one of the hotels we stayed at, maybe I slept next to the AC unit or something. I don't know what is going on. There's no sore throat. It's just a little weak today. So I apologize. We'll get through some text here. Jason, good morning, Jeff. Think we ever see any accountability with Anthony Fauci? Also, your guest host Friday was terrific. I know he talked about that at length and what Tulsi Gabbard put out. But didn't Biden just give him this like blanket pardon? So we had to assume that these pardons, I mean, they're constitutional. I don't know what there is that they could do here. But he did. I mean, he lied. He lied to Congress. He lied to the American people. Listen, our friend Jerry Carl had some questions about that. It got him in trouble, but he was like, it just didn't add up. All throughout COVID and his advice during COVID. Billy writes, concerning that guy who covered for you Friday, it's hard for me to trust someone who doesn't like Willie Nelson music. Yeah, well, everybody has their shortcomings. Ultra Runner. Generic ballot polls are trending down for Democrats and close to a tie right now. With all the negative news or Trump, why is this happening? Are Democrats starting to look at their own ballot options and losing heart? I think so. I don't think they're as good as a place right now than they were maybe 3 months ago. Really, the way I think this works, I think immediately after the strikes on Iran was probably the height of the division in Republican Party politics. But what always happens, guys, we've weathered a few of these storms as Republicans, is they sort of come together. They coalesce against the least of the two evils. And then go back to their battle stations. The Democratic Party doesn't do this. They don't look at the skirmish within the Republican Party and say, okay, there's this group of disaffected Republicans. Maybe we can woo them over to the Democrats. They just say, oh, they're all crazy. They can't even get their own act together. And you know, to be fair, Republicans don't do that either when Democrats. But Democrats don't have those sort of schisms like Republicans have the last 20 years. And this goes back to the beginning of the whole Tea Party movement. When you had these quote-unquote Tea Party challengers challenging these longtime incumbents, you had a lot more of that than you had on the Democrat side. You had Joe Crowley at AOC. But other than that, I mean, there's not really, like, high-profile primary fights in the Democratic Party. We'll be right back. This is Up and Talk, 106.5.